This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and of course some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you'd like to talk with Zorba, you can call us right now at 1-800-462-7413. And interspersed with your calls, some interesting topics.
Yes. Want to eat healthier? We'll talk about what you should do when you go to the grocery store. Okay. By the way, why do some people say grocery store? Where's that shh come from? But anyway, we'll talk about that. And we're going to talk about AIDS and a pill, different ways of reducing risk of actually contracting AIDS, what it means. New study out of the New England Journal I think is very, very interesting and provocative.
Okay, and what's our recipe?
Tasty's sausage and peppers. It's great, it's low fat, and it's tasty.
And a listener recipe, so we'll be on the phone coming up in, 25 minutes or so. But right now, your calls at 1-800-462-7413. And a listener with us now in Jacksonville, Florida. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
We're fine. How can we help?
Well, about a year ago, I noticed I was really straining. My eyes were really straining when I was reading. So I went to my eye doctor and had my eyes checked out, thinking I needed glasses. I hadn't been to the eye doctor in about 7 years. but in fact, my vision's fine. I have chronic dry eye. So the doctor prescribed Gentil over-the-counter eye drops, and he gave me a prescription for an eye cream that I use in the corner of my eyes called Torbidex.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, I still get a lot of fatigue in my eyes, and that often leads to headaches. So I wondered if you had any suggestions.
Wow. So now I've got a question. Do you wear contact lenses?
I do not.
Uh-huh. You don't wear contact lenses. What do you do for a living?
I'm a teacher, a high school teacher.
Okay. They bother you during the day? When do they bother you the most?
They do. Probably early to late afternoon after, a long day of reading and writing on the computer and so forth.
Uh-huh. So let me tell you something interesting about computers. When we look at computers, we don't blink as much.
Uh-huh.
So we're looking there, we're staring at a computer. Our blink rate, some studies have shown the blink rate down to 25% to 50% less than normal blinking when we look at people. Part of your problem is the computer. And blinking at the computer, and not blinking at the computer, because you've already said there seems to be an effect over time. It's in the afternoon. You're sitting at the computer. So I've got some ideas. Mm-hmm. One idea is the fact that when you're at the computer, you're physically not blinking, and it's a problem. You're there for, as you said, 15 minutes or a half an hour, whatever the timing is. What you have to do is you have to look away from the computer and do something else. And that's not an easy thing to do, let me tell you, to put that into your day. Usually we're at a computer and we're attending to something and we want to finish our job or finish our project. And one of the things I would do from a non-chemical and non-pharmaceutical point of view is I would intersperse two things. I just wouldn't do 15 minutes or half an hour of computer work. I would do my computer work for 10 minutes, attend to another project, 10 minutes, attend to another project. Just a minute away from the computer and you'll start to blink more. Doesn't have to be much time at all. But that's one of the things I would do. Number two, try different eye drops. One eye drop is not perfect. They're all different. Refresh, R-E-F-R-E-S-H, I think it's just spelled like the name, is an excellent eye drop that other people like. Liquid Tears. And it's sort of like cosmetics. Some eye drops are tackier, thicker, and hold a little bit more of the moisture in than another eye drop. So I'd go to the drugstore and I'd buy all the different eye drops. And I would find out which one works for me. That's what I would do. I would wear which one. At nighttime, do you put anything in your eyes before you go to sleep?
Just the eye drops that my doctor suggested.
Okay. I would look towards an eye ointment at bedtime because it'll be tackier and it'll stay in the eye during the bedtime and then cause less of a problem. So try all those things. That's what I would do. There are some prescription medications also that would work, but I think I would try these things first.
Okay, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And have fun with those high school students.
How can you be
at the computer for a half an hour? Don't you have to stare in the room and say, hey, guys, quiet down?
That's right, exactly.
Well, thanks for your call.
Thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. Now to Franklin, New Jersey we go. Hello.
Hi.
What's up?
Ever since I was a little kid, when I would go into a grocery store, I would have a problem. I couldn't go down the detergent aisle. And as I've gotten older, on and off over the years, different spans of time, I can't tolerate any kind of chemicals, like people with perfume, or I go into the bank and everybody has those hand sanitizers on the counter now, and I have to, like, throw my stuff on the counter and run back out, and then they wave me back in when they're done with my...
My goodness. Well, now can you go down the detergent aisles or no?
No. No.
You still can.
The last 2 years I've been working from home, actually, because it's gotten so bad.
Wow.
I don't go out to the movies because people have too much stuff on, and I can't.
So you can't do that. So this is really, I mean, this is a very serious social issue when things like this go on. I mean, this is definitely a serious problem that's going on. Have you been on daily antihistamines like Claritin or Benadryl at bedtime or any regular antihistamines?
No.
Okay. Well, I have a couple suggestions. So the first suggestion I have is a saline mist. That's what I would do. Go to the store. There's saltwater mist. Basically, they're made of saltwater. You can make one up yourself. But I would do a saline mist in your nose before you go into the store, and I would take it with you, because what will happen is the saline spray is sort of in your nose, and you might find that's a difference. And you have it at the aisle. You know, when you're sitting there and you go, I know this, I can smell something. This woman is in front of me. She has perfume. You pull out your little saline spray, and you do a couple of sprays quietly, you know, because your goal, obviously, is not to run out of the store, but to see if you can do that. And I would go try that out. I would try that out. First, number one, out of the box, non-pharmaceutical. Number two, I would try over-the-counter Claritin. Cheap, inexpensive, great antihistamine, 10 milligrams a day. I love it. I have allergies. I take it during allergy season when I'm bothered. It's as benign as you get from a pharmaceutical drug, and I would try that. And if that doesn't work, there's a spray, which is an antihistamine spray called Astelin, A-S-T-E-L-I-N. And I would try that spray. That's a prescription spray, and I would see if that would work. And that's kind of what I would look at.
Okay.
Saline, finally... The other possibility is to use a neti pot before you go out. And once again, I'm looking at what we can clear up in the nose first.
Right.
I would neti pot the nose. And what I would use besides either the saline and the neti pot is I would go to Alkalol, A-L-K-O-L-O-L. And Alkalol is an old remedy that's 100 years old. It has eucalyptus and other natural ingredients in it. And it clears out the sinuses in the nose. But it also leaves a residual smell to it from the natural ingredients in there, because I've used it. And that residual smell may overcome the other smells in the aisle when you go out.
Oh, interesting.
You see? So I would consider Alkalol. You can't buy it in a lot of places, but you can buy it online. And it's a 100-year-old product. The ones you buy are newly manufactured, but the recipe is 100 years old. And I would try that. Let us know, and then, because I want to know what's going on.
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking
pleasure.
My call.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. 800-462-7413.
You know, this. She has a severe issue, and I've been to France, as you have, numerous times, and there the smells are completely different because they don't necessarily wear a lot of perfume, but they also don't bathe like we do. You know, we're crazy bathers. We bathe and shower every day, and in France they do it once a week, and they have a whole different series of smells when you're sitting at those concerts.
True. Well, here's a researcher or some researchers who say if we want to eat healthier, we should pay in cash.
Well, cash is very interesting. You know, one of the reasons that credit cards have been pushed by banks and other institutions are not just that they want to get you necessarily hooked so that you can pay the outrageous interest rates, but it's also people spend more money when they have credit cards and debit cards and checks, and they spend less money when they have cash. So out of the box, if you want to spend less money, spend in cash. I mean, that's something my mom taught, and that's exactly the
but
case.
But healthier as opposed to...
Well, it's very interesting. They found, these are researchers at University of Buffalo that found that credit card users often purchased more unhealthy foods. They often purchased more foods that were pre-made in the middle of the store. It's very interesting. The good foods are often on the outside of the store. Dairy foods, dairy products, fresh meats, produce. You look at a store, they're all on the outside of the store. If you go into a grocery store next time, my recommendation is travel just along the outside of the store and pay attention to what foods are there. Go in the middle aisles and pay attention to what foods are there and think about what aisles you go down. And one recommendation I have is go to your grocery store you go to the most often. Do not go shopping and walk in the store and walk in the opposite direction of the way you normally walk in. So if you normally walk to produce, go to a completely different part of the store, which might be alcohol, and go in a reverse order that you go into and notice what's in that store and figure out where you spend your money. And 9 out of 10 times you'll find out you go through the same aisles and often you buy the junkiest stuff. And here they found if you pay with cash, you're more likely to get the perishables, the good stuff.
Yeah, that's so antithetical to me. I go to the grocery. I do the shopping.
Yeah. You do the shopping.
I go to the same store. Yeah. Uh-huh. I do the same route. Uh-huh. I buy the same stuff. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Week after week. If I go to a different store, I'm totally confused. Uh-huh. If I start at a different place in my grocery store, it ruins my day.
Yeah, it's very,
I have to do it exactly
day.
The same way
it
every
ruins
single
your
time.
Day. You know, but it's very interesting how ritualized we become. But you're a very ritualized person. I mean, you eat. You have the same thing for breakfast every day, and you vary your lunch, and then you have the same thing for dinner
pretty
every
much,
day.
Pretty much.
But going to a different store is exactly what everyone has had the same experience. You walk into a different store, and it's different. But the issue with cash is interesting, because in this study, they show that people are more likely, if they have cash, to buy the good stuff, which, of course, is produce. But something that our producer, Adam, brought up is here it is. You go to the store, and you buy fruits and vegetables. You don't go every day. And all of a sudden, if you buy too much, you look in the produce part of your refrigerator and you go, I've got to eat these fruits and vegetables. They're starting to go bad. They are perishable. And then do you increase your calories?
That is tough. You have to go often. You can't buy your fruit or vegetables and then wait another week and a half and go to the grocery store. It doesn't work.
But folks, go to the grocery store if you don't want to spend as much money paying cash. And if you pay in cash, you may find out you're eating healthier. Monitor what you're buying at the grocery store because that can affect your health.
What this means, I guess, is that smarter people pay cash and dumber people use their credit card.
I'm not sure I use, but I use my credit card all the time.
I do too. I'm sorry to say. 800-462-7413. Now to Springfield, Missouri we go. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, how can we help?
I had a couple of years ago, I went to the dentist and he told me that I was grinding my teeth at night and I needed to get a $700 after exam, it'd be $825 guard to, you know, keep from grinding my teeth, which I didn't bite on. So I've kind of looked at
That's very good, by the way. I love it. I didn't bite on it. Thank you.
But I've looked at other possibilities and, you know, I've tried the sports guards and I can't make them work. But I found that lately, now that I'm paying attention to it, I seem to be clenching my teeth. I don't know if it's grinding back and forth, but clenching my teeth even when I'm awake. And I wonder if there's anything in my lifestyle I can do to minimize this. I believe that that's one of the reasons I wake up oftentimes with a small headache, not a big one, but a small one.
Mm-hmm. How long has this been going on for?
Well, he brought it to my attention a couple of years ago. I don't know if it was going on longer than that.
How did he look at your teeth and say you're grinding down your teeth?
Yeah, he said, you know, little hairline, you know, you could see stress marks on them. But then my son went to a dentist recently for the first time in a couple of years, and he got told the same story.
Yeah,
so
Is it at the same dentist or a different dentist?
No, a different dentist.
Uh-huh. Does he sell the mouth guard, by the way?
I could get it through. Yeah, that was
through you could
that
get
office.
It through him. I mean, you know, yeah. I always wonder. I always wonder about it. If somebody is actually selling the expensive device, you know, do they have an interest in seeing that? And how scientifically
well,
based it is.
Well, that thought certainly occurred to me.
For $700, I think that would be the first thought out of the box. If it was $89, I'd say I'll take it. That's kind of a different issue, you know, but when it's 8 or 10 times that amount. So have you used the over-counter things and you haven't found anything in over-the-counter?
I've just started using one. I bought it at the drugstore.
How much was it?
$26.
Much better. I mean, 26. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what you get for $750 for a mouth guard. Well, I've got a couple of thoughts here. First of all, my first question is, you know, would another dentist look at your teeth and say your teeth are okay? You know, I mean, there are a lot of good dentists around, like there are a lot of good doctors around, but not everyone is the same. I mean, are these micro breaks common or not common? That would be one thought that I would have. Other thought I would have is, am I clenching my teeth at night? Am I waking up with a headache? Like you said, that might indeed be the issue. So let's look from a sleep point of view. Are you stressed out, by the way? You know, are things going on in your life that are significantly untoward?
I am a disaster reservist for FEMA, so I spend a lot of time in odd places.
But. Well, that's kind of a stressful job. Disaster, FEMA, stressful job. That would be kind of.
It can be.
Yeah, it can be a stressful job. What I think I would do is this. First of all, I would go with the cheaper mouth guard, and what I would do is I would use it for a month every single night. I would be absolutely perfect. And second thing is, if I were really concerned, I'd go to another dentist, and I would find a dentist who was highly recommended by a friend, and I'd go into that dentist, and I would say, look, I get these little headaches, and I wonder if my, you know, if I'm grinding my teeth. I wouldn't tell that other dentist about the micro cracks. I would wait to see if that dentist brought it up. That's what I would do. I'd go to a really good dentist and I get a second opinion because I'd want to know if it's there. A lot of people, when they grind their teeth, it's a headache issue. So if it becomes a headache issue, what I would do is I would say, if I'm under stress and I seem to be getting a headache as FEMA when I'm traveling to another area, I would talk to my regular doctor and I would say, I want to take something at bedtime when I'm traveling. Now, frankly, a lot of people do that. They'll take a low dose of Ambien or Halcyon, or they'll take a low dose of Trazodone, which is an antidepressant we use to help people sleep, or a low dose of Gabapentin, another drug we use. Because when you're not in your own bed with your own pillow, a lot of people have trouble. And so you take something when you're on the road, when you're sleeping. You don't take it when you're home. See if that does it. Those are the three ways. But I would do all of that before I would spend $750 or whatever it is without tax. On a contraption that my dentist was pushing.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. A job that's not stressful, talking on the radio. Before the break, Zorba, let's take a moment to entertain a sneezing solution from one of our listeners. Not too long ago, we had a caller on whose elbows got sore and tingly every time he sneezed. You thought that it might be a subconscious arm movement, like closing your eyes, that was jerking his elbow. Well, one of our listeners has another diagnosis. Sean from Kentucky has a similar reaction when he sneezes and was told by his doctor that this was quite common. Apparently, the rapid expansion of the diaphragm during the sneeze pinches the nerves, causing the sensation. What do you think?
I think that sounds great. Awesome. Makes sense to me. I love it. I didn't know that. A dynamite. I don't know if that's the case, but it sounds like it's good to me. It's a great explanation. Yeah. That's it. So that's wonderful. That must be exactly it. It makes sense. Yeah. We all do it. Have you noticed it?
No.
Some of us are more observant than others.
It happens to some and it doesn't. Anyway, your lifestyle questions and solutions are nothing to sneeze at. Let us know them by sending an email to the show at
Zorba@WPR.org.
A yummy recipe coming up from one of our listeners. More of your calls. Another interesting topic to talk over, and of course our medical myth buster, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. Callers are waiting, but a line is open now for you. But before our next call, we get to our recipe of the week. And this one sounds really yummy from Buffalo, New York listener Tacy Rozalowski. Tacy, hi.
Hi.
Good to have you with us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Tacy's sausage and peppers. I like them both. I like sausage and I like peppers.
Well, who doesn't?
Yeah. How'd you come up with this particular recipe?
Well, it was inspired kind of by a situation you just alluded to. I was living in Utica, New York at the time and went to an event that had been catered by a local Italian restaurant. And Western New York and Central New York are definitely the more is better kind of places when it comes to stuff that's bad for you. So I went to the buffet table, and everything was kind of floating in grease, but the sausage and peppers were just calling to me. So I dished up a good healthy helping of it, and it turned out really to be not so healthy. A heart attack on a plate is kind of the way I describe it.
We in Wisconsin understand that.
Well, I think a lot of places in the country understand that, yeah, and understand probably my reaction, which is, this tastes really great, and I'd like to have it at home on a regular basis, but I don't want to have a heart attack on a plate on a regular basis.
So you kind of healthed this one up.
I did. I was very inspired to do that, and so I took out the fat and found ways of pumping up the flavor so that anyone who eats it feels really satisfied by the flavor and doesn't miss the lack of fat so much. Mm,
good stuff. Let's do it.
So, yeah, let's do the recipe. So you use chicken sausage, four
mm-hmm.
chicken sausages.
And that was one of my cleanup things, and you can buy them with really reasonable caloric levels. So.
Right. And I think you brought up a really important point, reasonable caloric levels. So it's read that package,
mm-hmm.
read that package. And the reason is you have to read the number of servings, how much it is per link, because some sausage, chicken sausage or turkey sausage or vegetarian sausage, is really filled with oil and is not as good for you. And frankly, that's what you want to buy. You want to buy a good brand either at your local grocery store or specialty store such as Trader Joe's. And you want to buy a good sausage that's tasty mm-hmm. but has the right calories and the right oil in it. Okay, so four chicken sausages, three large green peppers, seeded, ribbed, cut into eighths. You only use green. You ever use the other colorful, expensive peppers?
Well, I always think of recipes as kind of a guide, and then you can improvise using that guide. And I think that this could be a really great recipe with using the multicolored, red, yellow, and orange peppers. It would just have a different kind of flavor cast to it.
And it does. I agree with you. And what happens is it's also a function of price. When the red and yellow peppers and sometimes the purple peppers are four times the cost of the green
mm-hmm.
peppers, I don't go for it. But
yeah.
During the summer when they're on sale, I'll do it. The other day I went to the grocery store and the red peppers were on sale and I bought a whole bunch, and they are sweeter, definitely sweeter than the green peppers, and I made a dynamite dish. So, okay, three large green peppers, eight cloves of garlic peeled and halved. I love it. I love garlic.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that this has eight cloves. Whenever somebody puts one clove of garlic, I think, who can eat one clove of garlic in a recipe?
Well, and I wanted to mention that for anybody who is a little nervous about that eight cloves of garlic, that this is really a kind of a slow food recipe in
mm-hmm.
that the cooking time's pretty long because you really want the peppers well cooked. That also means that the garlic is going to be very mellow, very sweet by the end of it, so you don't have to worry about not being able to kiss your date, that you've invited over to share this with. On the other hand, if you want more of a garlicky flavor, and I can tell that you guys are real garlic fans, you can actually put half of the garlic in at the beginning, and then halfway through the cooking,
ooh,
chop up the rest of the garlic, the remaining garlic, and add that, and then you'll have more of a garlic kick to it.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great. A jalapeno pepper, ribbed, seeded, and thinly sliced. If you don't like heat, don't use it, but of course you remove the seeds, and the seeds have a lot of that heat in them. We're going to use some scallions in there also. So scallions, four scallions, the roots and leaves removed. So you cut off and just use the green part of the scallion? Use the white part too?
Actually, I use pretty much the whole thing. And it's actually four bunches of scallions.
Oh, four bunches.
Yeah,
oh, four bunches
and
of
there are
scallions.
a lot of vegetables in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I remove the old leaves and then just cut them into 2-inch lengths. And also on amounts, when I say really big green peppers, I was trying to think, whenever I read recipes, it's all right, how much of this are they really talking about? So I'm talking about peppers that are softball sized, not baseball sized. They're really big peppers. This recipe is loaded with vegetables.
So when our listeners get this, what they really want to do is make sure they get lots of green peppers. If they have smaller
yeah.
peppers, they may add them. But three giant peppers
mm-hmm.
and bunches of scallions.
Four bunches of scallions.
Four bunches
yeah.
of scallions. And then we add a teaspoon of Italian seasoning. Half teaspoon of salt to taste. I've gotten in the habit now of salting at the end of the cooking, so I don't add too much salt at all. America has too much salt.
It is actually important in this recipe, though, to add a bit of salt at the beginning because because it helps the vegetables release their liquid.
Okay.
And it makes the braising liquid richer.
Which is great. What kind of use regular salt? Do you use kosher salt? What sort of salt is?
I actually use regular salt, but certainly people can use what they want. The amount at that you put in is pretty low, so you don't have to worry about the difference in salinity of the different kinds.
Perfect. Half teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper. Do not use pre-ground black pepper. It does not taste as good.
No, it does not.
And a cup of chicken broth. Always go for the low sodium, because there was an excellent article in Cook's Illustrated where they actually did a taste test of different kinds of chicken broth. And the low sodium chicken broth is more chickeny. So it's not just low sodium. They actually have to make it differently. They went back and looked at how it's manufactured, and there's more chicken flavor in low sodium chicken broth than there is in regular chicken broth. So let's make the recipe. Spray a 12-inch saute pan with a cooking oil spray. Heat over medium heat. Saute the sausages, the slices, in two or three batches, because you want to make sure that they are browned on both sides. Then remove the brown sausages, so you put them on a plate just off
to the side. And I want to just say that for folks who are really interested in keeping the flavor very robust in a dish like that, like this, is you really want to spend the time to do the browning very well. I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, a light, toasty brown. I'm talking about a nice, rich, caramel-looking brown, not burned by
any means. When you brown the sausage, how long do you take to
Probably
brown?
Probably takes 3 or 4 minutes per side.
Oh, per and side. That's a lot, three or four minutes per side.
Yeah, it is. And it is one of these things that when you watch cooking shows, they always say, make sure you spend the time to brown the meat, and you think it's something that you can, a corner you can cut, but in fact, you really can't. I always call those brown bits that are on the meat and then that are left in the pan kitchen gold, because there's just so much flavor in them. And for this particular recipe, you'll see when you add your liquid later, it's the whole sauce just becomes a very rich brown, and it's because you spent the time to brown the sausage.
Okay, so without cleaning the pan of oil, exactly what you put in, add the peppers and garlic, cook a few minutes, scraping up the brown bits, which are the frond, add the scallions, jalapeno, herbs, salt, pepper, broth, plus water to bring the liquid halfway up to the pan, bring it down to a simmer, turn the heat down as low as possible while keeping the contents on a low simmer. If you have trouble with your stove, get a little, these little metal grates that you put on top of it that actually even can make you make it simmer even less. And I've got one of those at home because we've got a restaurant stove and the simmer is actually hot. It's a little bit hotter than I like. Cover and cook, stirring for 30 minutes. Add the sausage slices now. Any collected juices. There's always a lot of juice in that plate when you put the sausage off in a plate, isn't it, or a bowl?
Yeah, exactly. And you really want to add all that because that, too, is gold.
That, too, is gold. Liquid gold. And the liquid may be reduced. If so, add additional liquid. If it looks like the pan is getting dry, recover, cook another 30 minutes. Tip the pan slightly during the last 15 minutes to reduce the juices. And bon appetit. It's wonderful. I have a question now. How much liquid should our listeners look for at the end with the pan? What does it look like afterwards?
Well, you don't want it soupy. You want enough so that if you serve this dish with rice or with couscous, for example, you'll have a nice amount of sauce to pour over your grains. So you don't want it super dry, but not soupy, just kind of in between. And at the end, it doesn't matter if you need another 10 minutes to kind of evaporate additional liquid, you can just remove the cover of the pan and simmer it so that enough of the water boils off so you have the right consistency of sauce. People can basically use their own taste as a guide there.
Right. And sauce, when you're making a dish like this, that's always something that it's to the eye. You know, how pleasing is it? You don't want it to be soupy, like you said. On the other hand, there's always a difference, and that's always a discussion in our house. My wife likes more liquid, and I happen to like a little less liquid, and our marriage is the is where we come to the middle part of that and compromise. It's wonderful. The calories are about 200 calories per person, of course. You know, you've got to look at how much your caloric intake is. I love it. I think I'm going to try it with couscous or brown rice.
Great.
Would be just wonderful.
Tasty, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
And by the way, could you come up with a heart-healthy version of buffalo wings for us?
Maybe. I'll put my mind to it.
Give us a call when you do.
I will.
Thanks.
Heart Healthy Wings, thank you so, so much. Dynamite recipe.
And for sending us this winning. You remember when Adam used to have the food here for us?
I know. What happened? What happened? I mean, the food was here. You know, I mean, the fact is, since he's gotten married, we just do not see the same amount of food in front of us that we used to.
I think he's waiting for another eggplant dish to stick on. For sending us this winning recipe, Tacy gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low-Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor On Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Thank you for taking my call.
We appreciate it. How can we help?
I have terrible nocturnal leg cramps, and I can't figure out a rhyme or reason to them. They come and they go, and then I'll go for a week without them, and then they'll come back and they'll wake me up 5 or 6 times in one night. I have to get out of bed and walk around.
Both legs?
Not simultaneously. Well, sometimes.
Sometimes. So you've had this. How many years have you had this for?
Well, these are the kind of relevant factors. I'm on tamoxifen, and they've been worse since I've been on tamoxifen.
Okay, you're on tamoxifen because of breast cancer, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And they've been worse. But did they start before that?
Well, I had them when I was pregnant. So sometimes I think, well, maybe whatever's going on with the estrogen, with the tamoxifen, is also relevant to that I had it when I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been on anything for restless leg syndrome, Requip, or any of the anti-Parkinsonian drugs? I think I would try that.
Well, what are they?
Well, first of all, the anti-Parkinsonian drugs are useful for restless leg syndrome, and your cramps might be restless leg syndrome or not, but I think I would give it a try, and you can take the drug at bedtime, and they sometimes help people with these twitches. We don't know quite what they are. For some people with restless leg syndrome, they're really neurologically mediated, and they come from more central sources within your brain, and I think I would try the drug called Requip, R-E-Q-U-I-P, from your doctor to see if that would help, since this hasn't worked. Tell me about your bedding. Is it very tight?
Well, they're fitted, but they aren't tight.
On your so you can move around your legs.
Yeah, that's not the problem.
No, because that can be an issue with some people. I think that's what I would try. I would try one of the drugs for RLS, restless leg syndrome.
Well, let me ask you. I sometimes think it's related to. I take calcium. I went to France, and I forgot all my vitamins and minerals and everything but my tamoxifen, and I didn't have cramps for a week.
So you went to France, you said, and you left them all home?
Yes, and I didn't have cramps the whole time I was there.
Uh-huh.
So I thought I'd died and gone to heaven.
And, of course, you're in France. So,
right.
So that was the benefit. Well, you bring up a good point. It could be one of the vitamins or one of the supplements. Do you know what I would do for a month then? I would stop all the vitamins and supplements, and number one. Now, let's assume your cramps don't come back. I would start one at a time, individually. I wouldn't make any combination and see if anyone individually does it. Now, with calcium, there certainly is a possibility, and I would switch then from calcium carbonate to calcium citrate, which is a different formulation of calcium. And for some people, switching from carbonate to citrate makes a difference in their gut and in other things. So I would do that. But I would stop all the supplements and all the vitamins and see if it goes away. And if it goes away, then you don't need to be on any medicine. It's a vitamin or a supplement that you're taking, and you test one after another and see which one it is. But I'd switch to calcium citrate. But I would stop that. The other possibility is just move to France. You know.
When can I do that? Right now is not a real good time to go. We just got that.
I think I'll write you a prescription. That's it. And you can deduct it from your taxes.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
And Pastor sounds like a French name.
There you got it. That's exactly it, Pastor. So thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
And good luck with it. We hope that Zorba has helped. 800-462-7413. Before the break, Zorba, let's jump over to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox for some help from our listeners. On a previous show, we were discussing ham hocks as ingredients for soups, and we were a bit baffled at what exactly a hock was. You put a shout-out to our listeners to fill us in. Well, our devoted fan base quickly jumped to the task. Several listeners wrote in to tell us that a hock is the ankle or tarsal joint of hoofed mammals, and specifically the pig, when talking about ham hocks.
So in other words, these are ankle bones that we're actually putting into the pea soup. I can certainly see why they changed the name from ankle bone to hock. There's no doubt about it. It sounds much better.
We always appreciate your feedback. If you have a lifestyle question, comment, or tip, let us know by sending an email to the show at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some really interesting research to talk about. More of your telephone calls, our medical myth buster 2 here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your calls coming up, but before we get back to the phones, seems to me really, really, really important news, Zorba, on a daily pill that can reduce the risk of AIDS.
Right. This is a really important study from an AIDS prevention point of view. So first of all, let's look at from an AIDS prevention point of view. One of the issues, especially for women with AIDS, is that their partners, and this is especially true in Africa and other parts of the world, will not use condoms. You know, and you have to ask permission from the other person in the sexual relationship to be able to use protection when you're actually having sex. And in some cases, that's okay, permission given, I'm going to use a condom. And in other cases, it's just not done. Mm-hmm. And so that's a major problem with AIDS. And so this particular study looked at a drug given before having sex and whether or not it would make a reduction in essentially in AIDS transmission. And and initially it looked like there was a 44% reduction if you took the pills, mm-hmm. if men took the pills and they had sex with other men. This was in San Francisco. And it looked like it was a 44% reduction in whether or not the other men would get AIDS. Yeah. These randomly assigned men who were not using protection.
Yeah. But now this pill has to be taken every day.
Every day. Yeah. But then what they did was they did blood levels and they found out that a lot of the guys were actually not taking the pill, said they were taking the pill. They were lying. Yeah. And when they looked at blood levels, they found that if you took the pill every single day, the pill was 90% effective in preventing AIDS from being transmitted to the other person.
90%
effective. Yeah. That is a huge breakthrough. Huge breakthrough in places like Africa. In the U.S., these pills are very expensive. We're talking about $5,000, $10,000 a year. In Africa, we're talking about 25 to 40 cents, and in Asia, 25 to 40 cents a day for a pill. There are a lot of women who want to use protection. Their husbands come home. They're on the road. They've had sex with other women or other men when they've been on the road, and they basically transmit it, and they have no protection because their husbands will not use condom. And there was a microbicide that women were going to use that's being tested right now. It's a vaginal gel that you put in to protect it. But that was only like 39% effective. It wasn't very effective at all.
Well, now, you mentioned condoms. This pill, I would assume, is not an alternative.
Oh, this is not an alternative to condoms. And I think we still have to look about safe sex and safe sex practices. But this may be a big issue, especially in developing countries, you know, where there's less control and where condoms can be expensive. You know, they can be costly.
But you mentioned $5,000, $10,000 a year. That almost makes it not workable in the United States.
Absolutely big issue in the U.S. And whether or not these things are going to become cheaper or not, as a matter of time, these drugs are still under patent. But in developing countries where the drugs are cheaper and they're given for HIV/AIDS, this is a major breakthrough that we're going to see major positive consequences about.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. See if we can help a listener now, Zorba, in Madison, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hello.
What's up?
I have gout attacks. I've had them for about 8 years now, and I'm 31.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to come on, you know, more in the winter.
Have you talked to a doc about this?
Yes, yeah, I've gone to the doctor a couple times.
And
usually, but now, you know, I'm a transplant here in Madison, so my doctor visits have been more, say, urgent care when I get the gout attacks. As my regular doctor, I've actually only seen twice.
So what has the doctor said when you've gone to him or her?
At first, it was mainly diet and overindulgence. Too much, say, at the time when I first got it was red meat and beer. And the last time we talked about dehydration being a factor.
Now, I have a question. Has your doctor talked to any of your doctors talked about medication to reduce uric acid in your body?
No.
That you take every, oh, well, let me tell you something. You've come to the right place. The reason is for years I did gout research. So first of all, I wanted to dispel a myth. Gout is a metabolic disease. It's an inherited trait that we don't quite understand. And the number one state for gout happens to be Alaska. Guess what the number two state is for
Wisconsin?
Gout?
Wisconsin.
Oh, gosh, amazing. Tom gets $100 for that. Yeah, Wisconsin is number two. Now, if you follow the low purine diet, this is it's an error metabolism. You don't process a byproduct of protein metabolism, purine metabolism the right way. And what happens is you build up uric acid and you get attacks. And if you follow a low purine diet and you get rid of everything that can produce it, red meat being pretty minimal, you stop eating liver and onions, who eats that anyway, you stop eating a lot of seafood, well, most of the seafood in Wisconsin, if you have shrimp, it's mostly breading, you can only reduce your uric acid by 1 point. That's it. Not much at all. And so the diet is hokum. It doesn't do much at all. And so the first thing you do with gout is you get rid of the gout attack. Best way is to take an anti-inflammatory. Have you taken that? Usually Indocin is a drug that's prescribed.
That's what I have, yeah.
So Indocin is good, but it turns out all anti-inflammatories work. So what I tell my patients are, you know, usually you get an attack and you're somewhere, you don't have the anti-inflammatory with you, you're on the road or you're out in the woods or something like that. Over-the-counter anti-inflammatory drugs, ibuprofen and naproxen, in other words, Motrin and Aleve, you double the dose on the bottle and you follow the instructions. So for Aleve, instead of one tablet twice a day, it's two tablets twice a day, and 9 out of 10 times that'll break the attack. So you don't need a prescription drug such as Indocin. You can do it yourself. The key is you often don't have those pills. When the attack is over, then you need a drug to lower your uric acid. That's it. And that works 95% of the time. You can get rid of gout attacks. It's not from overindulgence, because a lot of people overindulge all the time and they don't get gout attacks.
Right.
It can trigger it, but you need to reduce uric acid. And there are two main drugs on the market. Drug number one, allopurinol. It's good. It works. It's effective in a vast majority of patients. It's cheap. It's been around since the 1960s. And frankly, it got rid of a lot of gout attacks. That's why we don't see people with gout attacks most of the time. But if that drug doesn't work, because you've got to shove that uric acid down to the magic number of 6, if that drug doesn't work and you're still having gout attacks, then the new kid on the block is a drug called Uloric, U-L-O-R-I-C. And that drug is more effective at the 80 milligram dose than allopurinol. And for those who fail on allopurinol or those who have kidney problems, Uloric is the drug to use.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it. 800-462-7413, toll free. Time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. Today's myth deals with an old dieting strategy. It's long been thought that if you drink a glass of water before meals, you fill your stomach faster and eat less. Is this true?
Well, now when we picture this, you picture that if you drink a couple of glasses before a meal, you're going to drop 10 or 20 pounds, right? I mean, You know, that's what I would picture.
Well, you picture it filling up your stomach and then you don't eat as much food.
So there was a recent study in the journal Obesity, a very recent study that looked at this. And two cups of water, so we're not talking about a lot of water. Now, you know, 2 cups of water before every meal. And at the end of the meal, the water group, that was half the group, you can't blind it, had lost 15.5 pounds, okay, compared to 11 pounds for the people who weren't drinking water. So the difference was 4 pounds.
Wait a minute. What did the other people do to...
They didn't drink 2 glasses of water before they ate.
But how did they lose that 11
pounds?
Well,
they were all on a weight reduction.
Oh, okay.
So in other words,
okay.
It wasn't just
okay.
the water.
They were
actually on a weight reduction, calorie reduction diet. Half the people drank the water. Half the people didn't. It can't be blinded because you know if you're drinking water. But on the whole, they found there was a 4 pound difference. Now this is very interesting because generally in the wintertime, between around Thanksgiving and Christmas, most people tend to gain about 2 to 4 pounds. Mm-hmm. That's what they gain. And they don't lose as much in January, February, March. They lose about half that weight. So maybe if in the month of December, if you just drink two glasses of water before every meal, maybe you won't gain that weight. I don't know. So is it a myth? No, it's not a myth. Is the difference there? Yes. Is it marginal? Yes, it's 4 pounds. But for some people, that 4 pounds is a lot.
Yeah. Well, if you have a myth you can't stomach any longer, send it to the show and we'll try to bust it. Just send it in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Well, my question today is I'm going through an empty nest thing, and I don't even like to say the word empty nest, so I called it EN syndrome. And it's happening, and I didn't prepare, and it's happening. And so I trust Dr. Sorba. He's been cool, and I listen to him all the time, and I just want his take on it. Just give me some ideas of what else to do, what I'm already doing, but just to add to what else I might be able to do.
I've got some very specific ideas for you that might be very useful. Empty nest syndrome is a problem, and it really is a problem when either when your youngest, if you have more than one kid, goes to school, or when your oldest, you know, graduates school and goes on somewhere else. And what it often pulls off is depression. In other words, it usually uncovers some depression that may be there. And if the usual things don't work where you then develop other things because now you've got other, you know, you've got time on your hands because you don't have a child in your house, you don't have to do things for that. Antidepressants or cognitive behavioral therapy with a therapist can be really, really good for anyone with empty nest syndrome, can really make a very significant difference. So my recommendation, really out of the box, would be call your family doc, tell them you have empty nest syndrome. You may want to go and discuss it with them. They may want to consider an antidepressant, and you may want to consider a little therapy. I think a combination of both would be good because a lot of times if you don't actually look at why you're upset. And I mean, I've got 4 kids. You know, I know why you're upset. You're upset because you're a parent and your child is sort of beginning to leave the nest. Mm-hmm. Why you're upset, if you don't really address those, they can come back to haunt you. So you need both things. You need both things. You need some behavioral therapy and an antidepressant. That's what I would look at.
Okay, so, but I should have had a plan, though, right?
Yes.
In place, but I didn't.
But you know what? We don't always have plans in life. Life throws us hurdles, and then all of a sudden it's, oh, my goodness, I really didn't have a plan of what I'm going to do now. And that's where you need the counseling. Because even though you don't have a plan, you can get a plan. You may not have a plan today, but you can have a plan tomorrow. And that's really where the counseling fits in. So I really really suggest robustly that it's not just an antidepressant, but you need some therapy so you can come up with your plan. And it's all individual. Individual for you.
And we wish you the best of luck.
Oh, thank you so much for taking this call. Thank you.
Yes.
And that's what I'll do then. Thank you so much.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. Well, Zorba, before we get out of here for the week, it's time for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Although, this time, it probably should be called Disagreeing with Tom. On a past show, we dealt with a listener who used quite a few sports metaphors to describe his intimacy concerns. One of the phrases he used was the whole 9 yards. Well, I pointed out that this wasn't a sports reference, but a textile one, meaning the length of a piece of fabric. Well, it didn't take our listeners long to clog up our phone lines and crash our inbox to let me know that I was wrong. Dick, an old Air Force engineer in St. Louis, sums it up pretty well, writing, "In military lore, the term refers to early fighter aircraft and the fact that the ammo belt was 9 yards long, folded into ammo can." When the pursuing fighter pilot said, "I gave him the whole 9 yards," it meant that he fired his whole canister at the enemy.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. So it's not textile, it's ammo.
I still sort of stand by the whole 9 yards. It's thought by some to be that 9 yards was the amount of material needed to make a 3-piece suit.
Uh-huh.
But with those two options, and given
ammo versus textile,
and given that this guy and his friends have guns,
that's right.
I'm going to go with him.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm going with the ammo guy. You know what, Tom? You're a persona non grata when it comes to
I was wrong, and that's the whole enchilada for this edition of Disagreeing with Tom. Send in your rebuttal for our next edition of Disagreeing with the Doc in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We'll see you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg, better known by their heist gang name, Oceans 2, are responsible for getting this show on the air. Adam, Danny Ocean Friedrich is our executive producer. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1204Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.